the value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast about the themes driving markets and the economy now and in the future. I'm your host, David Brett.
Hello, everyone. Needless to say, our thoughts are with everyone involved in the crisis in Ukraine. But given the fast-moving situation there, we will try to provide, where we can, more regular updates on what is a humanitarian disaster and what may turn into an economic crisis and perhaps even worse. These updates will be in addition to our usual programming, so there will be a podcast as normal tomorrow, Thursday, March the 3rd. With that in mind, you may hear more regularly from some of my other colleagues helping out hosting the show. So in this episode, Duncan Lamont, Head of Strategic Research, speaks with Keith Wade, Schroders Chief Economist, on the potential impact of Western allies' sanctions on Russia. And just a note, this podcast was recorded at 12 p.m. GMT on March the 1st. Things may have changed by the time you listen.
Keith, let's dive straight in. If we start with Russia, first of all, and then maybe broaden it out to the global implications, there's been a lot going on, whether it's sanctions, restricting Russia's access to reserves, cutting banks out of the SWIFT system. Can you maybe briefly just talk us through what the situation is right now and what this might actually mean for Russia in terms of, do these measures have the ability to hobble them in much of a way?
Right. Well, the sanctions have proven to be more extensive than I think many people had expected. And certainly I think Russia has been quite surprised, particularly the financial sanctions, which have caused a real liquidity problem for the Central Bank of Russia. And, you know, there are concerns within Russia that they will actually run out of cash. Russia had built up a very substantial level of reserves at the Central Bank, over $600 billion. But essentially what these sanctions are doing are making it very difficult to mobilize those reserves by making it very hard to use them through the banking system and exchange those reserves, in which are in dollars and sterling and gold, making it more difficult to exchange those reserves into rubles to help support the currency. So, you know, you have actually seen a complete collapse in the Russian ruble as a result of that. So, you know, that's been very powerful. And it was interesting that Putin was having a meeting yesterday with his economic advisors to discuss the situation. But clearly, to the extent that the ruble weakens, then, you know, that will increase the price of imported goods, add to inflation in Russia, and that will squeeze people's incomes. But of course, it also undermines confidence in the currency, which can be quite sort of self-fulfilling and lead to a run on the currency through the banking system as well. So, you know, quite powerful in that respect. There are other sanctions as well, sort of on restrictions on technology and so on and so forth. It's interesting, though, that the sanctions have not gone into the energy sector. So those financial sanctions that I talked about, you know, don't apply to Gazprom Bank. So, you know, Russia is still able to sell its oil and gas to the West and is receiving something like $1 billion a day for that. So that link still remains. But this will have hit the Russian economy quite hard. And of course, we've seen a number of restrictions on the ability of companies to do business with Russian companies. So that's going to have quite a big impact on exports outside the energy sector.
That's really interesting, Keith. And I guess a number of these developments, if we just think about it in terms of the economic consequences, putting aside obviously the kind of horrible human costs that we're seeing unfold in front of our eyes, the squeeze on commodity prices, if we think about it, Ukraine and Russia are big exporters of cereals, things like wheat. And then you've also got the kind of issues with the oil supply and gas supply. What's the spillover of this going to be like when we think about things on the, say, more a global economic basis?
Yeah, so from a global perspective, I mean, commodity prices are the key transmission mechanism, and that's the thing that's really going to hit the rest of the world economy. So we've already seen inflation rise quite substantially as the economy has rebounded from the COVID crisis. we've seen inflation overshooting for some time now, and we've moved very much, I would say, in more of a stagflationary direction. And these events really just accelerate that. So you're highlighting oil and gas. You know, in the UK, we're going to see another round of increase in prices coming through on top of what we will get in April. So, you know, headline inflation in the UK is going to be pushed higher as a result of that. And we're already seeing the impact on, you know, petrol and diesel prices just for driving. So those are like a tax on consumption, those increases in prices, because these are seen as essentials, of course. You know, people have to drive, they have to travel, and of course they have to eat. So, you know, that does add to inflationary pressure around the world, and has a particularly big impact actually in the emerging markets, where, you know, food and energy are a bigger part of the basket. So that's, you know, that's definitely, you know, one particularly stagflationary effect. I think there are a couple of other effects just to mention. We mentioned the sanctions effects. That's, you know, clearly causing businesses to sort of hold off in terms of their plans. But also more generally, I mean, businesses thinking about investment, faced with this kind of uncertainty, the natural reaction is to sort of step back and say, well, OK, we'll wait until the dust settles. Unfortunately, I think it may take a little while for the dust to settle on this one, because clearly it seems that recent events mean that Russia is stepping up its activity in Ukraine, and we could be in for an extended period of uncertainty now as we we'll wait and see how NATO responds. So, you know, that will also have a dampening effect on economic activity.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
And if this goes on for longer than we might hope, these kind of risks to inflation that you've just spoken about there, or if it becomes harder for anybody to buy Russian oil and gas, for example, in the global markets, how serious a risk could that be for oil prices going even higher, or inflation going even higher than the already slightly pessimistic forecasts you have?
Well, yes, unfortunately, that is the direction, because it seems to us that there is scope for that. I mean, it's quite possible that, you know, at some point Russia decides it's going to turn off the taps on gas, or it could well be that, you know, the West decides that they're really going to have to stop taking Russian energy and funding this war effort. We put a scenario in the Economic and Strategy Viewpoint that's just come out. It's a new scenario, which is really the idea that the aggression from Russia continues and the crisis broadens out. So our central assumption in our baseline is that, you know, Russia does occupy the Ukraine and installs a puppet government, and then things begin to settle down somewhat. I mean, of course, the world will never be the same again, but there is a sort of settling down in terms of commodity markets. The alternative to that is that, you know, Russia continues to threaten Eastern Europe, that there is a build-up of troops and tension, not necessarily a conflict, but the risk premium on energy prices, on food prices, the risk premium increases, because, you know, the natural thing for people to do is to stockpile goods under these circumstances. And under that scenario, we have the oil price going to $150 a barrel. So that is a real further ratcheting up of the pressure from commodity prices, drives inflation higher and weakens growth. And that could probably well result in some sort of global recession.
Get in touch with us by email at schroederspodcasts@schroeders.com or visit our website, schroeders.com/investor download.
Hey, thanks. It's interesting, if not particularly reassuring, kind of comments there. Just coming back to your central scenario, I guess given everything that's been happening recently, you've probably been having to revise some of your kind of base rate, your kind of base expectations for growth, inflation, for central banks. Where are you right now, and kind of how would that compare with, say, where you were thinking maybe even just at the start of the year?
Yeah, well, this puts a lot of pressure on central banks, and this kind of economic environment that I'm describing is incredibly difficult for them, because obviously they're charged with keeping inflation under control, and the sort of descriptions, the scenarios I've been describing, you know, are going to make it harder to control. And the other problem for the central banks is that A, inflation is already quite high before this, and B, the stage of the cycle that we're in at the moment is one where, you know, labor markets are pretty tight. And of course, product markets are very tight. As we know, the problems with supply chains that we've been seeing over the last few months as the world economy has bounced back very rapidly. So, you know, in terms of the stage of the cycle, this is the inflationary stage of the cycle anyway. So very difficult for central banks. But what we're thinking is that they are going to take some account of what's going on in the Ukraine. And it will vary as to their proximity to that crisis. So, for example, the US Fed, we think, will continue to on the path of raising interest rates. We think they will lift off in March. We don't think they'll do 50 basis points. We think they will move quite gradually through the year. So what we've done is we've assumed that they continue to tighten, but they move more slowly. And they essentially just move rates each quarter. And they would move rates in March, in June, September and December. So they would do four rate rises. Before this blew up, we were expecting five. And of course, the markets were looking for more than that. We think they'll probably continue on into 2023. But it's just a slower, more gradual, more measured response. And I don't think this is the time for central banks to be getting aggressive by any means. You know, one of the other transmission channels from the crisis to the economy is through financial markets. And, you know, we've obviously seen some falls in risk assets, and that can have a knock-on effect to economic activity as well. So the Fed is very mindful of that, and they don't want to exacerbate it. But at the same time, they have to be seen to be addressing the inflation problem. In terms of the European central banks, the ECB and the Bank of England, the ECB is already quite dovish. The market has been predicting that they would raise rates twice this year. We've always pushed back against that and have felt that that would be too aggressive. So the view that we have has always been that they would raise rates next year. And if anything, what we've seen is that this reinforces that conviction, because we have had to downgrade the Eurozone forecast further as a result of the events in Ukraine, because clearly, you know, it's Europe that's most affected. So we have downgraded that a bit further. And it would seem to us that the ECB would not be raising rates this year. So that's you know, one of the key conclusions. For the Bank of England, again, we think that the Bank of England will step back a little bit from tightening. We don't think they will raise rates this month, but they'll probably go in May. Of course, the UK situation is unique in its own respect, because there's a lot of fiscal tightening coming through as well. And that, I think, will do some of the job of the Bank of England for it in terms of slowing down consumer demand. But we'd see a rate rise in May and then another one later in the year, again, with the central bank waiting for things to settle down. So compared to market expectations, we're below what the market is pricing in on the Bank of England. And I think generally we're more dovish than the market expectations on policy rates.
For more of a deep dive on the sanctions Western allies have bestowed upon Russia, you can read Valentino Romeo's article, "What Are the Implications of the Sanctions Against Russia?" at schroders.com/insights, where you can also find a live blog with updates each day throughout the crisis. That was the show. Our thoughts and prayers are with all those involved in the conflict in Ukraine. If you have any questions you'd like to put to us or to our experts, then please email schroderspodcast@schroders.com. And you can find more at schroders.com/theinvestor download. Please rate and review the show on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. But above all, please keep safe.